it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
By the way, if you're tuning in for Dan Lanning, he will not be with us this week. No. He's on the road recruiting.
Recruiting.
Things seem like they're going pretty well on the recruiting front for the Ducks. I did see some Ducks basketball recruiting news. One, they have signed the first ever professional Chinese basketball player. The Oregon basketball team has. So I'll see if I can find him. I think his name is Wei Lin, but he averaged like 18 points a game in the Chinese Professional League, and he's going to come and be a Duck. Huh. So,
well, I did see now, like, the NCAA, like, there is no more structure. There is a G League player that's coming back to play college.
Yeah, I saw that. It's so odd.
He played in the G League, but I guess he sued and he won his eligibility. I don't know if it was 1 or 2 years, but he was in the G League and then is coming back. And I don't remember. This was maybe a week or two ago. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what team that he's, or if he even committed, or if he just sued to come back, but he is going to be eligible. Like, the NCAA cannot win in court.
Like, no, I mean, you got the Diego Pavias of the world saying, like, well, if I just want to keep playing college football, then I will. And they're like, ah, I don't know.
It turns out, like, I don't know why anyone didn't figure this out before, but, like, the NCAA has all these weird rules that are illegal.
Yeah. Like, it's well, they can't enforce them. We saw the transfer portal stuff. It's like, you can't transfer. And then that dude just left Wisconsin, went to Miami. He's like, watch me.
Yeah. Remember, like, The pay for play thing, they put the NIL rules in, and then they're like, we're punishing Tennessee. And the state of Tennessee, not the university,
no, the state.
The state sued. And then the state of Virginia was like, yeah, we're going to get some of that too. And the NCAA was like, damn it. Like, anytime the NCAA does something that you don't like, just sue them. You'll lose. Like, they will lose.
And then the other small Ducks basketball nugget is they are awaiting a big announcement tomorrow. Trevor Ariza's kid, Taj, is one of the top prospects, and he's making his announcement between Oregon and USC tomorrow at 11:45.
I know Oregon basketball has been good, and they do a nice job of recruiting, but I wonder if the basketball recruiting will ever, like, if that will hit the kind of the fever pitch that the football program has.
It's so weird. Like, I just, the basketball roster construction is even stranger to me than, like, the football transfer portal stuff. Yeah. 'Cause, like, I think we talked about this during March Madness when you looked at where all the players of every starting five was, like, when they started their career and where they were now. And almost no team has, like, built with the same guys. And Altman was a, even before the transfer portal, he was a big transfer guy before that. And so it seems like guys who are good jump to go somewhere they can get more money, or they jump to the NBA, and there's almost never continuity. So it's like, what can you get with this squad this year? And it feels like it's hard to build momentum that way, at least in roster building.
Well, when you look at it, I just wanted to pull it up. I looked at the all-time Oregon Duck basketball recruits, because when you look at the all-time football recruits, like, I remember Haloti Ngata was a big deal. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Stewart was a big deal.
Cam Colvin was a big deal.
Yeah, and that one was a little
well,
more...
Well, he didn't play well, but he was the number one receiver at the time.
He was the number one receiver. And then Thibodeau was one, and that worked out.
D'Anthony was one.
D'Anthony was one. But when you look at, like, their basketball recruits, like, Bol Bol is... So this is according to 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
So Bol Bol is the highest-rated Oregon recruit, and Khalil Ware.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Khalil Ware transferred. He went to, I think he transferred to Indiana.
And then, like, Kwame Evans, Malik Harrison, Troy Brown, Lewis King, Jabari Brown, CJ Walker, Mookie Cook.
Yeah, a lot of the Oregon's most productive players were not highly touted.
No, and so that's kind of the weird thing, is that I feel like when they land, like, some of these guys, I feel like it doesn't really.
Like there's not a great hit rate on them or something.
No. Yeah. And so that's why I wonder, like, if Oregon basketball, the Oregon basketball program has been good, but it certainly does not have the reputation and the national success and the national brand that the football team does. But same resources. I mean, same facilities. I mean, and I don't know where the NIL gets split and revenue sharing and all that, but I wonder if the basketball program, because there's only really two programs in college that matter, and that's the men's basketball program and the football team. And the football team has it rolling. I wonder if the basketball program will ever kind of hit that same sort of stride.
Yeah, and they got themselves to a Final Four. They had a pretty good squad there. They frankly could have beat North Carolina, who went on to, I think, win the championship game over Gonzaga that year. Wanted to shift gears to a football item that I saw, or a couple football items that I saw. We got the ratings in from the Oregon-Penn State game.
Yeah.
8.5 million, yeah. I think I saw. Yeah. And now there's
Bama-Georgia had 10, I believe, like average. I think they peaked at like 12, but it averaged like 10.5, which, by the way, is better than NBA Finals, World Series numbers. I mean, it's just, it's... The second most popular sport in America is college football.
Yeah, it's remarkable how much juice that sport has now, and even compared to, like, I don't know, like pre-playoff era, I would say maybe. I don't know if there's just been like there's been more of a fervor for the good teams, if it's how we cover them, but it feels like college football is more at a fever pitch in fandom now than maybe it has been in many years before.
And yet I hear constantly from people telling me that the sport is broken, that it's dying, and it's I'm sorry.
The foundation's changing.
It is, but it's just...
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland. You know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I got to be careful. I don't want to like call anyone out. This is an upper left thing. This is you're living in a little because of where the college football scene changed the most. There was an earthquake that obviously devastated the West Coast, right? And a lot of schools fell off the map into the ocean. And the ones that even didn't fall off kind of were left struggling to find shelter and kind of put it together. Couple schools got a life raft out, and everyone's kind of bitter at those guys. But the truth of the matter is the rest of the country doesn't really care about your natural disaster. And it does feel like a lot of people on the West Coast are left screaming about, like, oh my God, like the world has ended. And the rest of the country's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, we're still doing things the same way for the most part.
Nothing has changed. In fact, it's
love it more.
It's bigger. It's bigger than ever.
Yeah.
So for any of those people that complain about transfer portal, NIL, all that stuff, I'm sorry, but the numbers are better than ever.
Mm-hmm.
We are living in a golden age of college football right now. You out here may not like it.
Yeah.
And some of the old heads may yell and scream, but the numbers don't lie. The big eye in the sky don't lie.
Right. Well, the reality is there has been some separation from the haves and the have-nots. Yep. There have been some teams or programs and fan bases that have frankly kind of been left behind, but the upper echelon is as good or better than it's ever been, and that makes the product on TV as good or better than it's ever been.
Oh yeah, dude, that Michigan, I remember when Michigan played Alabama, I think that was in the Rose Bowl, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. That thing got like 28 million people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just this, it was, in fact, it may have been one of the two or three biggest college football games ever watched. I mean, it was an enormous number. It was in the 20s. It was finally one of those where you're like, oh, well, that's an NFL type number. And no other sport can touch it. The NBA Finals can't touch it. Major League Baseball can't touch it. Certainly hockey can't touch it. I mean, the Olympics don't touch it at times.
No.
I mean, it's just, it is, college football is a gall darn juggernaut, which I laugh a little bit when I hear colleges complaining and moaning about money, and I'm like, please stop.
Well, I saw something about that today. I can't remember whose article it was, but I remember I saw Stuart Mandel pulled a quote from it, basically saying that the University of California, Berkeley, is still seeing positive effects from their college game day experience last year. that big production, they saw their enrollment and what majors offered on their webpage spike that day and have remained at levels higher than they've ever been since before that game day experience. And so to Mandel's point, he said, you know, for people wondering why would a team on the West Coast go to all the trouble to join in the ACC conference, blah, blah, blah. It's for things like that. It's visibility. It keeps you in the game. Still benefits your university.
Go back and look up the Nick Saban effect. It's the most insane thing. When you look at when Nick Saban got to Alabama and when he left Alabama, like he literally changed the demographics of the students. Because out-of-state tuition, in-state tuition, Nick Saban was worth billions, not millions, billions of dollars to the University of Alabama. And I get it. That's a, you know, Saban is a
But even on a much smaller scale, I do remember there being reports or numbers that came out after Oregon appeared in their first national championship game against Auburn. I mean, Chip Kelly was not Nick Saban, but where that football program got, they saw a massive influx of applications and enrollment just because of their visibility from their football program.
And to the people that like we can't compete, then don't.
Sure.
I guess that's my thing, is like we're living in a world now where
no one's making you play the games.
We're living in a world now where finally you actually have to pay for the people that are putting the product on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it asinine that people have the balls after all these years to stand up and be like, everything's changing because we now have to pay people. In what other world can you build a multi-billion dollar business on the premise of we don't have to pay the people that actually go out and do the work? We pay everyone else around them and we pay everyone else around them a F ton of money.
And we're happy to profit based on what they produce.
Yes.
But we're not going to actually pay them.
Sounds like a Chinese factory.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
But now that you actually have to pay people, now we're upset. And we don't like it because it's changing, because the place where I went to school can't live in this new world. Then don't. This idea that somehow it's ruined college football. No, it may have ruined your university's football team, or it may have changed the idea of what your university football team exists. But the people that are trying to like enact this SCORE Act through Congress, to where there are literally people trying to make the NCAA basically exempt from any lawsuit.
Right.
Because
they don't have a leg to stand on.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So you're literally running a business that's illegal and violates a million different laws, and you want to be like, well, we liked it the old way, therefore we're going to take $1 billion industry. Imagine if we did that with the auto industry. Imagine if we did it with anything.
Because it's like recreation and sport, people think it doesn't count. Well, those are still real people putting in real work that others care about.
So it's just this absurd argument. And yes, there's going to be some growing pains and things are going to shift and change. But and this is where I'll give Rob credit. He said all along, he said, this will end up being, because everyone was predicting doom and gloom. Well, a lot of people were. And he just said, dude, it may piss off some, but he goes, this is going to lead to more national eyeballs and more money than you can shake a stick at.
Yeah.
And now we've got private equity firms or whatever getting ready to dump billions of dollars into entire conferences. So yes, there will be some people left out in the cold, but the ones that are left standing, and it will be a lot of them, they are going to make so much money. And ADs and universities and coaches and everyone, I don't hear any of them complaining. I haven't heard one person willing to give back their money. The Dabo Sweeneys of the world have said, hey, the day we pay players is the day I go find something else to do.
Who's still coaching at Clemson?
And who, by the way, gets real pissy when he says, hey, if you fire me, I'm going to go coach somewhere else. Is it possible that you like coaching, or is it possible that you like coaching and getting $10 million a year?
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.